In the last part of this series, we talked about mRNA vaccine technology and hopefully answered some of your questions about COVID-19 vaccine safety, efficacy, and rollout. In this final part of the series, we're back with Dr. McDonald and we'll dive into the future of vaccine development and what that means for society. So, as we discussed previously, when it comes to protecting us against COVID, there's more than just mRNA vaccines. In fact, early vaccine development trials included lots of vaccine types, many of which have a proven track record spanning several decades. Early on in the COVID vaccine development process, there were hundreds of vaccine candidates. The majority of vaccine candidates being tested in preclinical and early clinical trials were recombinant vaccines, which is the type of vaccine that we use against hepatitis B. Those in phase 3 trials included inactivated virus vaccines, the same kind that are used against polio, mRNA vaccines, and inactivated viral vector vaccines. This, in fact, is the mechanism of the Oxford-AstraZeneca vaccine. The latter has also been used to protect us against Ebola. Although we now have vaccines with demonstrated safety and efficacy against COVID-19, Dr. McDonald explains why we can't just supply drop Pfizer packages all over the globe.
There are the mRNA ones, they're the protein subunit ones, they're the ones that are like the vector ones. Those are all kind of the same. It's like a piece to get it in there and make it go. The other ones that are coming along the pipe, there is an inactivated vaccine, and that I don't know that it'll ever come to Canada, but it in the clinical trials looks relatively effective. I mean, really very effective.
One of the inactivated virus vaccines in development is CoronaVac, developed by Sinovac Biotech, a company based in China. Recently, in February of 2021, late-stage phase 3 trial data of over 12,000 participants in Brazil found that while CoronaVac was only 50.65% effective at preventing COVID-19 infections, it had an 83.7% effectiveness in avoiding medical treatment and 100% effectiveness in preventing hospitalizations and mortalities related to COVID-19. There's also Covaxin, an inactivated protein subunit vaccine developed in India by Bharat Biotech. Interim data from Bharat Biotech has also reported 100% effectiveness against severe infection. While trials are still ongoing for these vaccines, they have been approved for emergency use in over 30 countries, including China, India, Brazil, and the Philippines.
I think it will be used in many countries because it's not as expensive. It doesn't require all the fancy refrigeration and other stuff that the mRNA vaccines do. And they are so expensive, Hugh. I mean, they're in a different league to the adenovector vaccines. The Oxford vaccine is very, very much less expensive and doesn't require minus 80 freezer. And even now we've got some data to say that, you know, you can maybe go less for the Pfizer one, but you're never, it's way too expensive. You can't have a vaccine that's costing, you know, 30, 40, 50 bucks a dose for a country where the average annual income per person is a couple of $100s. You know, it's just not going to happen. So I think what we need to be looking at here is the breadth of what's going to be on the table and hope that we will have enough vaccines that are not expensive, that are very effective, so that we really can scale up for all countries, because that's what's going to keep us protected.
Although vaccine prices can vary based on different contracts with the respective pharmaceutical companies, in general, Moderna's vaccine stands at the top in terms of price at over $30 per dose, followed by Sinovac's CoronaVac vaccine at $30, and the Pfizer vaccine at $20. In comparison, the AstraZeneca vaccine is the most affordable in the Western world, coming in at $4. It is also being produced and sold by the Serum Institute of India under the name Covishield. Although Covishield is being sold to private hospitals at $8 per dose, the Indian government is acquiring at just $2 per dose, making it the cheapest COVID-19 vaccine in the world.
So let me just turn that a little bit for you, is that people have said, well, why don't we just give Pfizer vaccine? Why don't we just pay to have that happen? Well, that doesn't work in a country where you have instability of your electrical grid. So you can't have freezers that don't have electricity for 8 to 12 hours, and the vaccine's probably ruined by then. And so many of these countries just don't have the capacity to do this in a way that, even if they had access and we could pay for them all, that these would be the right platforms for them. It just doesn't fit their context. So I do a lot of work in Uganda, and it would be unusual for me to be there for 2 weeks out in Southwest Uganda and not have an electrical down. Okay. It's just so common. It's just, we have a generator because it goes down all the time. So it that's the problem.
Fortunately, there already is a global initiative that exists to provide vaccines to developing countries that may not be able to afford their own doses of the vaccines. COVID-19 Vaccines Global Access, or COVAX for short, is an initiative led by the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization, or GAVI, the World Health Organization, and the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations. By gathering funding from wealthier countries, COVAX aims to provide vaccine doses for at least 20% of all other countries' populations as soon as they are available. The goal is to put an end to the pandemic on a global scale to prevent losses in the global economy and protect all countries from the continued spread and mutation of COVID-19. Currently, COVAX has shipped over 300 million doses of vaccine all over the world, most of which are the AstraZeneca vaccines for the reasons stated by Dr. McDonald previously. They're relatively cheap and easier to store. The plan is to ship 2 billion doses by the end of 2021, along with countries like the UK that intend to donate their excess supply. So then where do we go from here? As we mentioned in our first episode in this series, vaccine hesitancy, vaccines for measles and polio with near 100% efficacies still needed 80 to 95% vaccination rates to achieve herd immunity. With variants continuing to develop around the world, how do we really put an end to the pandemic? And what are the chances of it happening again?
Oh, a lot of people are asking about these kinds of questions, Hugh, and none of us know the answers. Let's start from there. It's only speculation. The COVID virus, the COVID-19 virus, the SARS-2 CoV-2, is not the same as influenza. It's not as much of a marauder as flu is. You know, flu both changes its hemagglutinin and neuraminidase periodically and then makes a big shift occasionally. These viruses are not, they're a different family and they're not as aggressively shifting as influenza is. And the other difference for influenza is we know that a number of the influenza viruses have jumped to us from animal and fowl and other animal vectors. We don't know where the COVID came from. It's thought to maybe have come from bats, the COVID-19 one, but we don't know for sure.
You might remember the swine flu pandemic in 2009, where an H1N1 strain of influenza swept across the world, infecting anywhere from 700 million to 1.4 billion people and claiming an estimated 284,000 lives. There have also been a number of notable avian influenza strains affecting humans, such as H5N1 and H7N9, although human-to-human transmission has fortunately been limited. There are also the Ebola and Zika viruses, which didn't originate from livestock, but are spread by vector animals like fruit bats for Ebola and mosquitoes for Zika. With the rise of meat consumption globally, the mass animal farming that has developed to meet that demand, and the destruction of wildlife habitats that has been bringing humans closer to potential vectors like bugs and rodents, the risk of another zoonotic pandemic is becoming a growing concern.
I think the problem we always have is we don't actually know what the next wicked virus is going to be. I think if somebody in 2018 had predicted that we would get SARS-CoV-2 as the next virus, they would have gone, oh, what are you talking about? You know, doesn't really exist. This one came from animals, okay? And so that's a problem for us. I think the skill sets and the basis in the molecular biology and virology labs that build the platforms on which you can make these vaccines and do it fairly speedily, that I think is huge. I mean, if this had been even 10 years ago, we wouldn't even have a vaccine by now. Okay. So the speed with which we were able to do this because of what we know from virology has made a huge difference in this outbreak. We would be still escalating with deaths. It would be just going out the roof.
The silver lining to our living through so many pandemics and epidemics is that hopefully we can take away lessons to better handle the next global emergency. For example, we have been able to see how not to handle a pandemic. Brazil is one of the countries experiencing the worst of the COVID-19 pandemic, largely due to the politicization of evidence-based public health measures. Although this is certainly not unique to Brazil, as anti-mask, anti-lockdown, and anti-vaccine movements can be found all over the world, basic COVID-19 protocols such as physical distancing, improved hygiene, and non-essential activity restrictions have not been implemented nor promoted by the federal government. As a result, Brazil has recently reported 11% of all COVID-19 infections and 26% of all COVID-19 deaths worldwide for a country of only around 200 million. On the other hand, New Zealand is touted as one of the countries that has been handling the COVID-19 pandemic effectively. Their identification of initial transmission chains with widespread testing, followed by contract tracing, along with a strict lockdown, has resulted in only 522 cases per million people throughout the entire pandemic. Many African countries are also improving their zoonotic outbreak protocols, having dealt with numerous outbreaks of Ebola, West Nile fever, Rift Valley fever, and more.
So I don't think we can necessarily predict which virus it's going to be, but I think we can do a lot of work on what strategies we need to do for early detection, and then when we know, how to quickly mount a response that's going to be effective. But it seriously hasn't done this for hundreds of thousands of years, okay? So it's been very special for us to have it in humans. So I think the piece that goes with that is, I think this will not be influenza like 2, okay? But I think it also may be a little more picky than some of the other viruses that we've controlled relatively simply. If you got the vaccine, you're done like dinner and you're okay. Okay. I'm not sure it's going to be that simple. The rise of some of these variants, the fact that some of these vaccines do not prevent asymptomatic infection, the fact that we have no vaccine that's 100% effective, the fact that this is a global problem that we need to have all of the people in all of the countries around the globe immunized, and that is a huge task. Even with the COVAX and Gavi rollout that's happening, they only have enough vaccine for 20% of the people in low and middle income countries. We need another 40 to 50% of them, probably 60, before we will have wiped it out in those countries. So the long and short of this is, I think we're going to have to live with COVID being here on the planet for a while. And then hopefully once we really do get 70, 80% of the world's people immunized, and we've been able to deal with the variants by having boosters with the new piece in the mRNA, if it's an mRNA vaccine or whatever, that we will eradicate this, okay, from humans. But we'll just have to wait and see. It really depends on how much it mutates. It really depends on whether it goes to other animals. And we'll just have to wait and see. How long do I think we're going to be in COVID? Don't hold your breath.
So when will COVID-19 really be over? Some experts have determined that there are two endpoints to the pandemic for each country, the first being a transition to normalcy, and the second being herd immunity. If you live in the US or the UK, you may already be experiencing the transition, with many other European countries expected to begin this transition as early as the second quarter of 2021. Herd immunity is projected to follow in the third quarter for the US and the UK, who are the leading countries in terms of vaccine availability. For those living in other countries, the end may also be within arm's reach or a distant future, depending on a number of factors, such as current number of cases, vaccine availability, the effects of seasonality, population demographics, and more. The world is on track to produce enough doses for 80% of the global population by the end of 2021, but cost and distribution logistics may leave some lower-income countries mostly unvaccinated until 2022 and beyond. And even as some of us return to the normal that we've been longing for, the new normal might look a little bit different.
I'm very hopeful in Canada that everybody will have had a dose of immunized, one dose at least, by the end of the summer, as now is being speculated on, and then moving on to the second dose. So I think many of us will get a lot of our lives back, meaning that, you know, schools can function and businesses will be back more to normal. But, you know, we will still, every time somebody comes into our country, they have the potential to bring it to us. And when they bring it to us, it'll pick out everybody who's not immunized. The non-pharmacological ways of rolling COVID, we may need to continue to do those for a while. Do a little hand washing and some of the other things that we do now. For me, it's no big deal now wearing a mask outside or in a shop. You know, hey, it's not that bad a deal. Hand washing on the way in, not that bad a deal. Social distancing, not that bad a deal. Do I want some of my life back? I sure do. I want to be able to go to the theater again. I want to be able to go to concerts and all of that kind of stuff. But I think we can do it in a way that's safer than what we've done in the past. What people forget is we have people die every year in Canada from influenza, significant numbers of adults. So if the flu vaccine decreases that but it doesn't take it completely away because we never had the flu vaccine levels to be able to do that. So maybe we just need to be able to continue to do some of these things that aren't that harsh, you know? I mean, come on, washing your hands, wearing a mask, a little social distancing, not a big deal.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Hashtag Health. If you enjoyed listening to our podcast, please consider giving us a rating or review and subscribing to our show. You can also follow us on Instagram or Twitter at Hashtag Health Podcast or like us on Facebook. This episode was written by me, your host, Patrick Kim, produced by Mary Nguyen, and edited by Mary Nguyen and Hugh Kim.